You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers for Friday, February 1st. I am Chris Manning, your host and the site manager over at FearTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site. If you aren't already, you can find this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever else you listen to podcasts. A five-star review is the best way to support the show, especially if that's on Apple Podcasts. And you can find the show on Facebook and Twitter at Locked On Cavs. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Rights. Today's show is a Draft Friday show, so it's going to be me and Trevor Magnotti talking about Texas Tech wing Jarrett Culver. He is rising up the draft board. You heard me and Trevor talk about him on the High Risers podcast a few weeks back. And he is someone that I think very much could make sense for the Cavs, regardless of where they pick. So keep that name on your radar. Jarrett Culver, Texas Tech, more on him today. So today's show also is going to just briefly now touch on what is up with Kevin Love and David Nwaba. So on Thursday, Kevin Love took a magnificently important step in his recovery. He went through his first full 5-on-5 practice. According to Larry Drew, Love did, quote, pretty well. He moved around, quote, pretty well. He got a bit winded, according to Drew, but that was the first time he had been in a contact situation. He looked good, according to Drew. Now, Drew also did say that he could not project when Love would make his official return. According to Drew, the Mavericks game on Saturday would be, quote, pushing it. So maybe don't expect Love back. And again, remember, this is a guy who has not played since October 24th. If we're looking at him getting in a game before the All-Star break, which was sort of when he had said he might come back, the Cavs only have a few games left here. So obviously Dallas on Saturday, at home against the Celtics on Tuesday the 5th, the Wizards on the road Friday the 8th, the second half of a back-to-back that Saturday in Indiana, and then they get the Knicks at home on the 11th and the Nets at home on the 13th. So there are a few games there that he could play. I would doubt he's going to come back and play back-to-backs right away. That would seem to be odd to me. So perhaps if he does come back and it's on the road and that's next Friday, he won't play that Saturday. But there are a few games left, but there isn't a ton of time left he's going to play before the All-Star break. And notably, there are only two games left before the trade deadline. So if you're someone who thinks they might flip him before the deadline, they would ideally need a showcase game, you would think, and him to look good. Two games left to do that, and that just makes me think he's just not going to play into any trade scenarios the Cavs are going to have, which are going to heat up here soon, about a week to go, and we'll see what else comes up. Additionally, David Nwaba practiced on Thursday, which is another good sign. He has missed 18 games in a row. He had that severe ankle sprain. They pulled him back a little bit because he had took some contact in practice. He didn't respond well, but it looks like Nwaba is getting close to practicing as well, and this is another good thing. For the Cleveland Cavaliers, they just are missing guys that are quality, and if you're looking at Nwaba and Love and what they provide and what this team is lacking, that would really help them. Love, obviously, is the hub of the offense, a focal point, takes pressure off of guys like Jetty, guys like Colin Sexton. That's going to help. Nwaba is by far the best on-ball defender on the team. He can let Jetty slide down and not to enforce anymore, at least not every possession, and he will just raise the overall quality of the defense because he can be at least a good defender on the floor. Are they going to save the Cavs season? No. Are they going to take them out of being one of the worst five teams in the league? No, but that baseline level of quality goes up a little bit, and because of the changed lottery odds, if the Cavs improve to like the third worst team in the league instead of the worst team in the league, that can help them at least be a little bit better and get some improvement without sacrificing draft position. And that will bring us to today's show. So Jarrett Culver of Texas Tech is the focus of today's podcast. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning. We'll have three things up to watch for in Cavs Mavs. Just a quick little Saturday morning newser for you to kind of get your fix, and we'll see if anything is said on Friday. The Cavs do have an open practice on Friday around noon, so stay tuned if you're the sort for any news that comes out of that, and then on the podcast Saturday morning, anything Larry Drew or the players say that is of note, or if a trade happens, because that is the industry we're living in. If you are looking for some reactions to the Kristaps Porzingis, to the Mavericks trade, Locked On Mavs, Locked On Pelicans, because they'll have some takes on there as well regarding the Pelicans not trying to get Kristaps, and Locked On Knicks have you covered, and check out Locked On NBA as well, because those guys are going to go deep into that trade as well. So, but without further ado, me and Trevor Bagnani, I'm Jared Culver from Texas Tech. Enjoy, and have a great Friday. And joining me for this week's Draft Friday is Trevor Magnotti. You can read his draft guide every week over at fearthesword.com, and you can read his writing and big boards as well over at The Step Back. Trevor, what's going on?
Hey, thanks for having me again.
All right, so Jared Culver is going to be our draft breakdown this week. If you listened to our High Riser show, he's someone we covered there. He has flown up draft boards, Trevor's in particular. I believe he's number at number 3 in Trevor's latest big board. He's from Texas Tech. He is, I think when you watch him on tape and you get a chance to watch him play, he's a very interesting prospect, and he stands out a little bit differently than some of the other guys because he's maybe a bit more naturally balanced. At least that's my initial sort of look at him so far. But Trevor, let's look at him from an offensive perspective. Obviously, I think a lot of times when prospects are evaluated, it is the offensive end that makes them sort of stand out initially, and that's what gets you drafted higher, and it is an offensive-driven league right now. What does Jared Culver look like as a scoring, passing, whatever you want to say about his offensive game? What does he look like as an offensive prospect right now?
Well, he's a guy that's going to not jump off the page at you or off the court at you when you're watching Texas Tech. You know, he's not going to he doesn't have a very big usage as compared to a guy like RJ Barrett or compared to some of the other lead guard prospects in this class. The thing that interests me most about Culver is just how efficient he is with when he has on-ball opportunities. He's not a guy who has a very strong established mid-range game, but is very comfortable taking the ball off the dribble towards the rim, and also has a little bit of a hint of some pull-up three potential. I don't think that he's comfortable enough with that shot yet to really project it fully, but I think that he can get there. And that's what really makes him exciting, is he has a great frame. He's probably at least 6'8 at this point. He measured around 6'6, 6'7 coming into his freshman season at Texas Tech. Now definitely looks like he's at least 6'8 or 6'9. It appears to have grown a little bit over the summer, and has really strong upper body. And while he's not super dynamic in terms of his change of direction and his ability to explode up at the rim, he's a guy who has great balance and coordination, and I think that's something that's really going to help him as a finisher at the next level. He's graded out as a very high level finisher because he's able to maintain very good balance as he goes towards the rim, and he uses that upper body to engage a defender and power up and through to be able to get up to the basket. And that's not something that we see from a lot of the other weed prospects here in this draft. He's also shown a lot better passing mechanics in the last couple weeks, looking very comfortable as a pick and roll passer, both in drive and kick and also in dump offs to the big man. And I think that that's something that's really exciting. He's a guy who is a much more fleshed out pick and roll offensive creator than we see from a lot of the other weed prospects in this class. And I think that's what makes him really exciting. He's not somebody who, when you watch him, you think, oh, this guy's going to be a definite future star. This is a guy who is like a 1% level athlete or a very confident shot maker in the case of Barrett. He's a guy who instead is just consistently going to be able to grind out points as both a finisher and a creator out of the pick and roll. And that's something that's very effective for an NBA team to have in their offense.
Does he pro Zion? I think obviously projects as a number one scorer. I think if RJ Barrett hits, he would seem to be a number one option as well. Cam Reddish, I mean, his profile is maybe like as a number two, but like he also seems like he could be a number one as well if things kind of work out for him correctly. Is among the guys that he's sort of grouped with right now in that upper tier of draft prospects, with Zion obviously in his own, and then maybe the next tier with RJ and Culver and Cam Reddish. Does he profile as a scorer, maybe in terms of at least potential, because we don't know yet, obviously. Does he have the potential to be a number one option like those guys seem to project to be?
I think he's a lot more like Reddish, where he's a definite secondary or tertiary scorer in the offense who has a little bit of number one scorer upside. I would actually grade out Culver's potential to get to that point as much higher than Reddish's, just because he has that foundational finishing is just so important for a lead scorer at the NBA level. Just you need to be able to get to the rim. You need to be able to break down a defender and be able to get them off balance and get the shots that you want that are going to be efficient. We're seeing that with Colin Sexton right now. He doesn't have that ability to be a consistent finisher, and it's really affecting his ability to go to the other aspects of his game. So Culver coming in with that very strong ability to finish and a little bit of craft as well is going to be at a little bit further on the development path than a guy like Reddish is, who potentially could grow into that finishing role, potentially could improve his handle enough, but ultimately right now just doesn't have those two aspects of his game that Culver does, and it's much harder to project a guy like that to be a number one option. I think I'd much rather try to work with Culver to be able to turn him into that. And even if he doesn't get all the way there, he has enough shake to be able to get around quicker defenders. He has a very good handle, and he has that finishing, as we talked about. And that I think projects very well to him being at least a secondary pick and roll guy, if not the primary initiator in an offense.
Okay, two follow-up questions to that as we wrap up the first part of this breakdown. How would he fit on a team where Colin Sexton obviously is going to be around next year? And the side note of that, if the Cavs do keep Kevin Love, how would he fit on a team where it's Kevin Love, who we haven't seen much play with Colin Sexton, and then we're not really sure what else yet? Obviously, Rodney Hood maybe could be back. Jetty will be around, has played really, really well of late. But how does he fit specifically with Sexton? And then how do you think he would fit as a rookie in a Love-Sexton kind of featured offense?
Well, I think if you're building an offense that's designed to have Sexton and Love be your primary creators, I think that Culver can definitely fit in there. I think that more a guy who would fit a little bit better what I think his role was going to be initially in the league would be something like a Nick Batum, where he's not going to be the primary guy bringing the ball up, not going to be the guy who's racking up a majority of the assists or a majority of the usage, but who can, when he gets the ball swung to him, be able to attack a closeout, is able to attack off screens, and most importantly uses his passing ability to be able to open up things elsewhere in the offense. And I think that's what I would expect from Culver in that situation. And early on in his career, I think that's what he's going to look like. He's going to be kind of that secondary complementary wing who is able to play make a little bit and is mostly going to be used attacking mismatches and attacking on the weak side when the ball is swung across to be able to break down maybe the weaker defender and be able to get points out of a secondary action in the offense. I think that's kind of what you would expect for him immediately. And then kind of as he gets more comfortable, as his body continues to mature and he continues to grow into this frame, I think that you can start to feed him more and more offensive possessions. And I think that's going to be kind of what his path is if he gets to that level.
We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back to talk about Jared Culver's defense and then get into sort of the scenarios that we've talked a little bit about on this show before, but get into them a little more in terms of would you maybe trade back if he's the best guy on the board. But stay tuned for more Locked On Cavaliers. Okay, and we are back. Okay, Trevor, so Jarrett Culver as a defender, it's something the Cavs desperately need. They have a historically bad defense. Colin Sexton struggles on that end. I think the one thing that I really want to see if the Cavs can do for next year, and this would involve David Nwaba as well, but it will have to, I think, involve the draft, is they need a guy that can keep Jetty from having to chase around Lauri Markkanen and Paul Millsap and other guys. As an NBA defender, what is Jarrett Culver's profile? And could he, if he's maybe not going to bump Jetty down to defending twos, could he at least maybe guard a three so they can find someone else to guard fours?
Well, one of the things that's interesting about Culver and what makes him such an exciting defensive prospect is that Texas Tech runs a very NBA-style system. They switch a ton across the board. They switch almost every ball screen, and they switch a lot off ball as well. They play kind of a little bit of a hybrid zone where Culver is most often defending on the wings. It's kind of like a 1-2-2 look, but it's a little bit more spread out where the guys are kind of hugging the perimeter, and Culver usually sits kind of right at the break and is responsible for defending either somebody in the corner or somebody who's standing out on the wing. And we see him get matchups with all types of players because of that defense. We see him defending point guards, as we saw in the Iowa State game. He got switched on to Wendell Wingington and Tyrese Halliburton a couple times, and that was good. And he's quick enough to be able to stay with those guys. And then, you know, in the Texas game, he can turn around and he can defend Jackson Hayes, who's their 7-foot center who has NBA athleticism. Did a really nice job against him the couple times that he got switched onto him in the pick and roll. I really like that switchability that he has, you know, with that frame and his footwork on the defensive end. I think that he is going to work really well as a wing defender in the NBA. He's not a guy who plays the passing lanes a lot, and that's my one criticism of him, is he's not somebody who's overly impactful in terms of steals and blocks, and that's kind of the traditional way that you would measure defense at the college level. You want to see a guy who's impactful, consistently getting in passing lanes, consistently altering shots, and just generally being in position to affect the opponent's offense. And Culver doesn't really do that in terms of the statistical numbers, but he has great balance getting through screens and is able to fight through with his size and his footwork. He has a high motor. He gets on the floor when he needs to, and that's great. And most importantly, he's just a really good communicator on the defensive end. He's constantly talking, communicating switches, because you have to in that defense. Otherwise, they would give up a ton of backdoor cuts, and that just doesn't happen. Everybody on Texas Tech talks, and that's one of their biggest strengths. And I think that that's going to make the transition into him being a NBA defender pretty good. I think he's going to be a guy who's going to come in and always be competent from day one. And that's not something you can say about a lot of NBA defensive players.
Yeah, I can't. Number one, I think it's hilarious that there's a, and I feel really bad for that player, that there's a player that whose last name is Halliburton. That's just like really unfortunate in 21st century America. And secondly, if he got drafted to the Cavs, and like obviously it'll be a new coach based on what we know right now, and it's you know, assume Mike Longobardi will not be running the defense anymore, but like the Cavs just don't talk now, and that's like very funny that they would potentially have to get a guy who's like really used to talking on defense. And like that would be like an interesting thing, is just like, what does it look like when he's like on the floor with like Jordan Clarkson and like Colin Sexton, who just like don't really talk on defense, and like that's just an issue. And it'd be like him and Deli just like screaming trying to get the defense in order. Like that seems like it could be peak hilarity. He's in your second tier. Obviously Zion is in his own tier, and that's sort of where we are right now. Is he, if the Cavs obviously, because of the draft lottery odds, could slip a little bit back, but will likely pick in the top five. If they're at four and a team comes calling with two picks, which seems a little less likely now because of what's happening with Memphis, is there a scenario where like is he high enough on your rankings where like you would stick just with that one pick and not trade back to keep him? Is he like worth it for you?
Yeah, I think that he's going to be a guy who either comes in and dominates workouts and gets put where he should, or he's going to be the Wendell Carter of this draft, where he's pretty clearly the second or third best player in my mind, but there's a disconnect between what the actual value of him is going to be and the projected value by NBA teams, because you know he doesn't have that super sexy game like RJ Barrett or like Ja Morant, who are getting the other guys getting buzzed in the top five, where you know you watch them play in college and they look like they're going to be potential stars because they're consistently putting up huge numbers and the aesthetics are there. The aesthetics really aren't there for Culver in the same way. And I think that that's going to negatively affect his draft stock. I think he's probably going to top out as maybe, you know, a guy that is going to go fourth or fifth behind Reddish, Morant, Barrett, Williamson. I think he's going to kind of be in that 5, 6, 7 tier in terms of how NBA teams are going to value him. So if the Cavs value him highly, definitely that would be the way I would like to see them go. I would like to see them pick, you know, the guy that I think is going to be the third best player in the draft if they have the second or third pick. You know, in the case where, you know, someone else is really in love with Ja Morant or RJ Barrett, I think that the Cavs do have a reasonable argument to trying to trade down. I think if they can trade down to 6 or 7, if there's a team like, say, the Magic really want to get their hands on Ja Morant, and they are offering, you know, a future first and this current one to be able to trade up, similar to what Atlanta offered to Dallas, or Dallas offered to Atlanta, excuse me, this past year, I think that that's something that the Cavs would be foolish not to take, because you can slide back to 5 or 6, knowing that Culver's probably going to be there. And I think that the Cavs are better off taking him than they would be taking a guy who isn't necessarily a perfect fit for their team, like Morant would be.
Basically, so like if you're looking at the draft odds now, obviously the Knicks are going to be, it seems like the way this would have to happen if they were to trade back would be, the Knicks wouldn't seem to have much incentive to trade up necessarily, but who freaking knows? The Hawks, you would guess, would be pretty patient. The Bulls, who knows? The Suns, you would guess they'd be patient because they have Booker and they have Ayton and Mikal Bridges, etc. Like a team like Orlando, maybe a team like the Wizards feel like they need to just do something drastic. Maybe, I don't know. Like Atlanta like does have two, you know, second two will have likely have two lottery picks, right? Like that's sort of where we're headed right now. So maybe like they, maybe it's not Ja Morant obviously because they have Trae Young, but maybe there's like some other guy. Maybe they like really want Reddish or maybe to be their Clay or something like that. Like that to me seems reasonable. Trevor, in terms of like your actual dream fit, and we're gonna kind of wrap this up here with Culver, with the guys that are in his sort of tier. Where does he rank on your like fit with the Cavs list? Obviously, we need to see what happens with Love, what happens to the rest of the roster. But if you're just saying, okay, there's Colin Sexton, there's Jetty Osman, and there's maybe like this out, you can sort of sketch that outline of the team. Where is he in your fit rankings for what the Cavs like might be at the beginning of next season?
I would have him probably tied for second with RJ Barrett, just because it's such a natural fit regardless of what the Cavs do. You know, the league is designed in such a way where you can, any 6'8 or 6'9 wing player can pretty much play with anybody because of the flexibility that you need to be able to play small, you know, the ability to defend up a position when a team goes big against you. If you have a strong wing with on-ball skills or shooting, he can fit in any lineup, pretty much. You know, we see that with Boston, who has used Jaylen Brown, who can guard fours regularly and can be a secondary scorer in their offense. They play him anywhere from the 2 to the 4, depending on the lineup that they want to play. You see Utah do the same thing with Joe Ingles. And I think that that's kind of the player that Culver is going to be at the NBA level. I think that he's going to be a guy who can play across multiple positions, be able to play across different roles as well. And, you know, I don't think there's anybody on the Cavs right now who necessarily pushes Culver in a way that he's not going to be able to have some value to the team. And I think that that's very important. And that's why I really like him as a fit for the Cavs, is because whereas with Zion, you know, there are the other bigs, there's Kevin Love. What do you do with him if he's still on the roster? You know, if he doesn't solve the potential issues at small forward, you just don't see that with Culver. You know, if you want to play him and Osmond together, play Chetty at the two, play Culver at the three. If you want to go small, play Culver at the four. If you want to go big with Nwaba and Love and Thompson, then you can play Culver at the two. I think that there's reasonable expectation that he's going to be able to play all three of those spots and be able to provide value at each of those positions. So I don't have any positional concerns with Culver, and I really don't with Barrett either, because the Cavs need someone who can score. So I would put those two very similar, although for kind of opposite reasons. Barrett, because I think that his scoring value outweighs any positional issues that you're going to have, particularly on defense, and Culver because there isn't a bad fit for him.
That's actually one follow-up question here. RJ Barrett is the name you mentioned. He obviously is the higher profile prospect because of the name value he had coming into college. He plays on a Duke team that is much watched television, frankly. Where do you separate them? Like, when you're picking hairs, you're kind of nitpicking a prospect and you're trying to put one ahead of the other. What separates Barrett and Culver in your mind right now?
The gap is closing between those two, especially as Culver kind of breeds out this pick and roll on ball scoring that he's been showing kind of more and more of throughout the season, because the things that translate very quickly and need to translate for a guy to be a good scorer in the NBA are you need to be sure, you need to have some semblance of a pull-up three jumper, and you need to be able to pass. If you're going to be on ball, you need to be able to do those three things. And Culver can do all three of those things. RJ can do at least two of them. He's got a decent pull-up jumper, and he's an pretty good passer, although he doesn't always show it, but he doesn't have the finishing, and I don't know that he ever will. So I think that that's the thing that really kind of keeps Culver hanging around. Otherwise, I would say Barrett as an offensive player far outweighs him. You know, he can get to spots a little bit better. He's a little bit better at dictating the flow of an offense when he's the ball handler, you know, dictating where everybody else needs to be and passing guys open. I think that he's better at that. Culver's better at finding guys, but Barrett passes players open a little bit better. And I just think that Barrett's shot is a little bit more projectable. I'm not in love with Culver's mechanics, even though his jumper is falling at a little bit better rate this year. I think that Barrett's is much more aesthetically pleasing, and he's going to be able to translate that a little bit better, especially as a pull-up shooter. So I like him as an offensive player. And I think that, you know, I think that you can work with his defense a little bit, and there is still hope for him, because there's hope for anybody who has Barrett's size and quickness as a defensive player. But as of right now, I think that Culver is kind of approaching that because he already does all those things. He is a year older, but he does all of those things on defense. And I think that he's showing to be a little bit better of a passer. So it's getting very close. We'll have to see kind of how Barrett continues to progress throughout conference season. But right now, he's a little bit ahead of Culver just for the shot-making perspective.
Would you? So, but right now, if you were at number two, let's say, and you don't get Zion, would you? Is it like 100? Like, if you're gonna like put it in a ranking, like, and kind of give us like X percent of me says Barrett, X percent says take Culver, or, you know, X other player, like, how does that break down for you? If like Zion isn't, you can't get Zion, how do you, where does like that little stacking of Culver within the Reddish, within the Barrett sort of tier for you right now, where does he fall there?
I think it's like 70% Barrett, like 30% Culver, and maybe like 1% like Bol Bol. Would be
kind wow. of wow, wow,
just like that 1%, where like if he comes back and it looks like he's put significant work into his shooting, and he's made that even more of a weapon while he's been, you know, sitting with his foot injury, I think there's a conversation that he could be the second best player in this class, and there's an argument, and I wouldn't think it was totally crazy if they took him, but it's mostly Barrett Culver right now.
Yeah, that's where I think I am as well. I'm very fascinated by Culver. I would be very interested to see if the Cavs do try, and I don't know this, but I would be very interested to see if they do try to build in a way that Culver would seem to fit more as a more than Barrett would in terms of just ball movement, in terms of the sum of the parts is greater than one specific guy. And Culver seems to, and I could be oversimplifying this or be wrong, but it seems like he might be that a little bit more than Barrett would be. And I would be very intrigued if the Cavs went that way, because I think Sexton's best case scenario is something as a point guard on a team like that. I think Jetty is certainly going to be a player like that. That is what he's going to be best served doing. And that's sort of how you can maximize Kevin Love if that's something you want to do, if they keep him. And these are big questions. We don't know all the answers to these yet, but to me, like, that seems to be a path, and I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that the biggest thing is the Kevin Love thing, because if they have him and they can maybe go out and get one other, like, mid-level free agent, then I think that that's going to make the make a potential Culver pick look a lot more palatable, if they, especially if they, like, do something crazy, like pass on him or on RJ for him. They won't do that because RJ is probably locked into the number two pick at this point, but I think that would make things a lot more palatable if Love can demonstrate that he's healthy and the Cavs can actually commit to having him be on the team for next year.
Yeah, I mean, if they just sign, like, some decent wing, like, get a slight, maybe, like, a slight upgrade over what Rodney Hood is, and just kind of, like, get a little bit of extra play there so you aren't relying on Nwaba, who I really like, but has, obviously, his limitations. I think that's going to be a really, really fascinating thing. And there's a lot of things we're going to have to get into to kind of understand where this roster is really going to be at. But Trevor will be here breaking down it all. You can, again, read his writing at For the Sword and the Step Back. Find him on Twitter at Illegal Screens. Trevor, as always, thank you so much.
Yep.
Thanks again to Trevor for coming on today's podcast. Again, you can find him on Twitter at Illegal Screens. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Rights. You can find the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Cavs. And again, support the show by leaving that 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Submit your mailbag questions to lockedoncavs@gmail.com. Trevor and I will be doing a big draft breakdown show next Friday, and we want your mailbag questions. So get those in and ask any question you have about the 2019 draft, and we will answer it. We'll begin back tomorrow looking at Cavs practice notes, anything that comes of note there, as well as three things to look for in Saturday's Cavs-Mavericks game, aka the one time Luka Doncic comes to Cleveland and I get to watch him play in person. And if you're lucky enough to go to the game, or at least just watch it on television, enjoy watching Luka, because he is a ton of fun. But we'll talk to you tomorrow. This has been your Locked On Cavaliers episode for Friday, February 1st. I am Chris Manning. Have a great Friday.